fascinated by. I'm fascinated by her all the time, but the latest developments in the saga that is Ronda Rousey, and more importantly,
oh god, you're easily worked up then.
More
over
importantly,
Ronda Rousey
Edmund
topics.
Tavertian.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, the guy is just gold.
He really is. You do find yourself missing Edmund Tavertian every now and then, don't you, as a fight fan? As much as the guy you love to hate, right?
That's your guy, though. I feel like that's your guy. You and Edmund had a pretty good thing going.
Well, we're friends. Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
That's what I just said.
That.
I miss him all the time.
You said you love to hate?
I said people love to hate.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, we'll get into what Mr. Tavertian said, one of the great trainers in all of MMA, what he said about Ronda Rousey and where she stands in her potential comeback, I suppose, 50-50, we have the number at. We'll get into that later on in the show. But let's just get right into the recap of last weekend, because I do think there are some intriguing people actually still competing. And at the top of that list is Luke Rockhold, who came out and had, I don't know, I guess a dominant finish. I don't know if it's a great performance overall against David Branch in the main event of UFC Fight Night 116 in Pittsburgh last week. I guess before we get into any of the other issues, how would you evaluate how Luke Rockhold performed on Saturday?
Result good, but some of the problems that have led to his downfall, still bad. Still there. You know, he falls in love with that. And I'm not a coach. I'm not trying to, overanalyze anything.
Brett Tavertian.
But he really falls in love with that counter right hook. Literally anytime someone comes forward and whatsoever, he throws the counter right hook, and he's not really moving his head as he does it, and he gets hit frequently as he's throwing that. It's an effective punch. I mean, we've seen him land it as well, but I think guys are keyed in on it, and David Branch is not a hard hitter, and so you just ask yourself, if you watch this fight in the first round, Rockhold, I don't want to make too much of it. It's not like he was just thoroughly dominated in the first round, but he took some hard punches up against the fence. Punches that, got Michael Bisping his title last year. So, again, great result, but, man, Luke, you can't get hit by these guys. You can't get hit by the harder hitters in this division.
Yeah. So, I thought going into the fight, I talked about it last week, that I thought it was a bad fight in general, just because Luke Rockhold goes into a fight against David Branch, and it's really, I mean, listen, he improved his stock certainly by getting a win. Just getting back in there, getting a win, that's good. But like, you're not gonna get people clamoring for a title shot by beating David Branch. Right. If you lost to him, you're completely out of the picture, 100%. But I guess you evaluated where you thought he was in the fight. I would completely agree with that. But where does this put him now? Because we'll get into, telling GSP to step aside, all the other things, but realistically, where is he in the division?
He's in a good spot, but I think he's where he was, before this fight was made.
Yeah.
Before the fight was made, he came out and talked about this. They tried to get a fight with Yoel Romero. Romero had just fought a 5-round fight against Robert Whittaker this summer, and Luke Rockhold thinks that should be a 5-round fight. I don't necessarily blame him for thinking that. He's saying we should headline. It should be a 5-round fight. That's where we are in the division. Those are the fights that matter. I want a 5-round fight. I think he's also saying it, of course, because stylistically.
Romero has
5-round fight probably favors him.
Yeah, for sure.
And Yoel is saying, maybe a 3-round fight.
Right.
And he's also saying he wanted a little bit more time, I think, after the 5-rounder with Robert Whittaker earlier this year. So I know that they're going to, that's both sides are open to that. Now it's just, where do they put it? Is it a 5-round fight? It's not going to headline pay-per-view, obviously, but there's one more Fox card at the end of the year. I think that's a potential landing spot for it, but we'll see. But I think as long as they can come to an agreement of some sort as to when is the date, how many rounds are we doing, then that's where Luke is.
But you're right. I mean, that fight could have and almost was made before this fight ever happened. So really, yeah. I mean, really what happened Saturday was irrelevant.
Showcase fight, get paid, I guess. He got sick of waiting. That's really what it was. According to him, he was calling out all kinds of different people. The fights weren't materializing. He wanted to go out and fight Anderson Silva in Brazil. It got to a point, I think, where he's like, my knee is healthy. Let's go. I want to fight.
Right.
And he took a fight against David Branch. Would have been a disaster had he lost, but he did not.
So Luke Rockhold gets the victory. You mentioned, right now, realistically, he's in that you know, just outside that title picture, a very clouded title picture, which we'll get into right now, the fact that you have a middleweight title on the line with Michael Bisping, who is the champion, but his only defense has been against somebody outside the top 10, who is now fighting somebody who hasn't fought in 4 years and was the former welterweight champion, who's now coming up in weight. Robert Whittaker has captured the interim title in the meantime, but is injured. So it's this very cloudy title picture that's kind of got some answers, but it really doesn't. And then Luke Rockhold is just in that next level, which includes Yoel Romero, who lost the interim title fight. Also includes Chris Weidman, a former champion who lost 3 in a row and now is back on track, although I don't think Rockhold knows that he won that fight. Because I don't know if you saw, like, Luke was like, he's lost 3 in a row. I don't want to fight him.
Oh,
like,
Luke said that?
Yeah. Like, he did win.
Oh,
he's
is that
coming off?
Is that maybe like some sly shade, or he legitimately did not know that Chris had won a fight?
I think he legitimately did not know. I think Luke was
Which
doing,
makes it almost worse.
Luke was doing other things, I think. Like, he was not worried about who's fighting who in the middleweight division. So, I mean, he's in that kind of next-tier mix.
Yeah.
But what he chooses to do is give one of the most non-eloquent, and I just used non-eloquent, non-eloquently, it was a very bizarre speech that he gave to try to convince George St. Pierre to step out of the title fight.
It was bizarre.
What was the point of it? Like, it's not going to work. You don't think that Luke Rockhold is sitting there expecting, like, you know what, I'm going to give this speech, I'm going to really lay the case out, and George is probably going to pull out of the fight tomorrow.
Well, Luke has just in talking to him kind of a couple times leading up to last weekend, he seems to have it in his head that George isn't going to make the fight.
Right.
Which, you know, George hasn't fought in 4 years. And
George,
he keeps
pushing back the fight, too.
He kept pushing it back, and he has had 2 ACL surgeries. So, you know, how will his body hold up in a training camp? I mean, maybe Luke is just like the power of positive thinking. Like, he's not going to make it. He's not going to make it. And I know he's going to be ready. He will absolutely be ready to step in and fight Michael Bisping on short notice, which cool, you know? But yeah, you only get that one post-fight interview.
Yeah.
And you can hope all you want, and you can get ready, and that's a smart strategy. But in terms of actually getting on the mic, you just confused everybody.
He sounded drunk. I'm not saying he was drunk. I don't think he was drinking during the fight. He sounded like a drunk guy, like getting up and giving a speech at a wedding.
Luke is a phenomenal fighter, and he can be occasionally good on the mic, but he was also usually not great on the mic. You know, I think we saw that in the Michael Bisping fights. You know, Bisping, he kind of, you know, put Luke in his place a little bit. He capitalized on every little awkward moment.
Yeah.
And I think what Luke's like go to is just like the, I don't really care about this anymore. You know, like I'm too good for all of this.
Too cool for school guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which can be effective, sure. but not, you know, immediately after when you got to call out somebody, when you got to make it clear exactly what you want. The too cool for school guy.
I think what it is it worked for him his whole life, because it's effective when you're just like the good-looking dude at the bar that's just trying to get a girl, and you're like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then that worked for him, so he's like, ah, this is going to be my persona.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really work at, like, this level when you're trying to, you know, book fights and trying to, you know, entertain people.
That's all right, though. You win some, you lose some.
Are you trying to do the Luke Rockhold character right now?
No.
I feel like, I can't. I you win some, you lose some.
No, I can't pull it off. No, what I'm saying is if that's a double-edged sword, I'll live with that. I will live with being the cool guy at the bar if I can't make a good post-fight call out.
That's actually a very good point. So he makes a call. He did say, now listen, the good part of that, and you alluded to it, is that, you know, you're going to make that call out. You don't actually think it's going to work. You don't think he's going to step aside for you. But then what he does follow it up with, and he said it backstage, is, listen, I'm going to take a day off. I'm going to celebrate this. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to train, and I'll be ready for November 4th if I get called in. That would be, I guess ironic might not be the exact right word. It would be pretty interesting if then he's taking a short notice fight against Bisping the way that Bisping took a short notice fight against him last June. It would be
poetic,
a great narrative,
I think, is what they say.
It would be poetic. You're right, I think. That's why you're a phenomenal writer. It would be very fitting if that's what happened, and I think it would be a good narrative. I'm sure it would take a lot of the wind out of the sails of UFC 217, but at least he would be there. And I think that's the right approach of, all right, you know what? I said what I said. That's fine. But now I'm going to go back. I'm just going to train. And if they need me to step in, I can step in and take that fight.
Yeah. Well, and I think he's also somewhat Maybe indirectly in competition with a guy like Chris Weidman, you know, because Chris is from New York, and Chris has come out and said he's going to do the same thing. He'll be ready to step in. So I think maybe that was in Luke's mind as well, that I have to mention that, you know, because I am kind of in an indirect competition with this guy. So maybe that played into it. But I'm optimistic. I think George is going to make it.
Yeah.
I think after all this.
Are we close enough
now?
It would be very
MMA in 2017 if he did not make it.
I mean, we've barely had any main events hold up on UFC cards.
Almost none, it feels like.
It feels like almost zero, including as we're going to get to next week already.
This weekend.
Changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, this weekend has been a change already. So, we'll monitor that situation. I actually also wanted to get into the point that he made, the case that he made for why GSP should get out. He basically said, get out of the fight. You're too small. You're not going to win. Even if you take him down, he's going to get right back up. You're going to get outstruck. You're not going to win the fight. So, I mean, I know what he's trying to say of, hey, just step aside. But put that aside and just look at the argument that he made. Did you agree with him about GSP being completely overmatched in this fight?
Yes. I like Bisping in the fight.
Really?
I do.
Not overmatched.
No. But
his quote was, GSP is overmatched.
And it's going to get hurt. Yeah, you don't belong here.
Yes.
Yeah. You're making a mistake, even taking the fight, et cetera, et cetera. I don't go that far, but I do like Bisping in the fight for the reasons
that
he said.
Really? Not for the reason that he's just been out for so long?
Well, that's part of it as well.
Right, but I mean, he's just going to scramble up to his feet. You can't take him down anyway. All the other things. I thought there was some valid points, but I don't think it's going to be, like, he made it sound like it's going to be easy. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight at all.
No, I don't think it's going to be easy, but I favor Bisping, and I don't think a lot of people do.
You're definitely right about that.
I think, the perception is that George is still George, and he's going to come back, and he's going to win this fight, and then Michael Bisping has been a paper champion the whole time. And it's almost like gone too far in that direction. You know, like there was truth to that, of course. The Bisping was an underdog. He knocked out Rockhold in, I don't want to say a fluky fashion, but probably
a little bit.
Not going to happen again. And then since then, you know, he's had the Dan Henderson fight. But now I think we're almost too far beyond that. Like, Michael Bisping is still...
Which he almost lost the Dan Henderson fight to.
Well, but with George, he's still good size. His wrestling is underrated. George isn't a big knockout threat.
No.
So, yeah, I do. I like Bisping in that fight.
I did, and I did go back and look at the stare down again from the press conference earlier this year, where allegedly, according to George St. Pierre, Michael Bisping was on a lot of different things.
I tend to believe him.
Yes, so do I. But I watched it not for that, but for the size, and I was like, Bisping is a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
he is.
I mean, you think of George as the, you know, a pretty big welterweight. I mean, I did.
Average, I would say.
Yeah.
He never looked like tiny or anything,
but
he was never that big,
end,
big, big guy.
At the end, he was starting to get big.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think some people think of Bisping as not a massive guy, but he was a guy that came down from 205.
Yeah.
He's a bigger guy. So I thought the size discrepancy was bigger than I really realized it would be when I went back and looked at that stare down video. So that'll be certainly interesting to monitor as well. I know you talked to a guy that I have a tough time even hearing from, but you talked to Mike Perry.
A tough time hearing from? What do you mean?
I just can't. I can't deal with him.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, obviously the racism is a problem, but it's just, there's just something about him.
I think he's a guy who has his faults, but doesn't really try to necessarily hide them. And
but he gets mad when they're pointed out.
Yeah. He did at first. I think he's been better.
Yeah.
I think maybe people are hanging on a little bit too much to what happened in his first two fights.
Possibly.
Which, you know, you can. I mean, that's fair. He made some missteps, for sure.
Right.
And I know his management was like, hey, Mike, you know, be you, but be like a little slightly lesser version of you. You know?
Right.
But no, I mean, he's had some tough times and he's persevered through them. I mean, you can respect that about him, and he's fun to watch. He is definitely fun to watch.
And
entertaining.
What I was pointing out is you had him on your podcast, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you can go check that and hear from Mike Perry. He wasn't just being outwardly racist and crazy with you.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, he toned it down for that one. Yeah.
All right, good. I would love to hear his take on politics or something one day. That maybe that's what we'll do. with Mike Perry down the road. But
we should.
As far as his performance, certainly a short notice fight. People want to see him fight Alves. He gets newcomer in Alex Reyes, finished him quickly. Do you take anything from that at all?
No.
Or is it just did what he's supposed to do against a short notice guy?
I think he's going to get a big fight by the end of the year. I do. I mean, he's going to be in Detroit. He was born in Flint, Michigan. Right. I don't think they're just going to. I mean, maybe they'll go back to Alves, but I think they're going to look at some bigger fights before that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, he certainly has the he's the power, and whether he has the personality. I won't say over the top, charming personalities, that kind of thing. But he has a personality that is drawn to either loving him or hating him.
Interesting.
It makes you want to see him fight. So, yeah. I mean, he will if he keeps knocking people out in the first round. He's going to get big fights, and he's going to be on a big platform. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he handles it.
Yeah, I was talking to him about his girlfriend, because his girlfriend
corners him,
like dances with him as he's walking out, and he is dead set on she will be in the UFC making money within a couple years. No fighting experience, but he says that she picks up on it quick. He's like, I need to get her in the gym and get a girl to hit her, because we need to find out if she can get hit or not.
Okay.
Because that's a big part of the sport, obviously, and you never know until you put it in there. But he's like, I am so confident that she can do this and she can be very good at it.
Anything else from the card jump out to you? I mean, Hector Lombard goes down in the third round. I think Kamaru Usman is just a phenomenal prospect that just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah.
He's gone from prospect to contender. And Uriah Hall with, I don't know. I never know. I saw people like, oh, Uriah Hall, maybe another run. Like, I don't know.
No, man, I know exactly what to think about Uriah Hall. I mean, he's going to be in fights that are pretty interesting, because he can always knock out a guy in stunning fashion, or he can, look like a poor version of himself and lose fights in kind of frustrating ways. And there was kind of both in this one.
We saw both of them. So, got worked over in the first round, thought he was done, comes back and wins a fight late. It was kind of a very typical Uriah Hall career in a nutshell.
I think we know his ceiling at this point, it's fair to say. But he's a nice addition to a card. When you're going through prelims, man, Uriah Hall fight. You're like, all right, I'll watch it, Uriah Hall fight.
And I actually use this to point out to somebody. It was weird. It was on during the prelim card was on in the press box at Canelo Triple G.
Mm.
And I was up there watching. I'm in there. I'm kind of set up right in front of the TV, so I can watch UFC while the boxing is going on. And it's, two fights into the preliminary card, and Uriah Hall is out there fighting. And one of the guys that covers boxing with me at the RJ was like, he's like, oh, who's in this fight? And I was kind of telling him about the fighters. And he's like, wait, isn't this just like the second fight on the prelim card? Like, why are these like known guys? I'm like, yeah, you get that with UFC cards. Like, I couldn't tell you who the guy in the co-main event is on the Canelo Triple G fight.
Nope.
But this is what I think makes UFC fun sometimes. It's like you get those guys and you're like, oh, it's only the second fight on the prelim card and it's Uriah Hall.
You forget, like, even sometimes. As many boxing matches as I've been to, you show up and you're like, why am I here?
Yeah, exactly.
you're like legitimately mad at yourself because the arena is completely empty. The fights are like four rounds.
Yeah.
And you're like, why did I do this to myself again?
But ended up being a phenomenal main event, but it's just, you got to get there. It's a struggle in the boxing sometimes. And MMA, you've got the good fights down the card a lot of times in UFC. All right, well, when we come back, I said I didn't want to start with it, but we will get into it now. Ronda Rousey, news made this week from her coach, Edmund Tavernian. Also, look at UFC 117 and Bellator in San Jose this week.
MMA Insider Show.
We're back here, MMA Insiders, Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto. Follow us up on Twitter at Adam Hill LVRJ, at B Okamoto ESPN. Here every Wednesday night, getting you the scoop on what is going down in the world of MMA. Look back at UFC Fight Night 116. We'll look ahead to UFC Fight Night 117 with a brand new main event coming up on Saturday, and the Bellator card up in San Jose as well. A couple other news and notes to end the show, but I did want to talk about Ronda Rousey. I pushed it off until now. I am fascinated by her all the time, of course. But there was some, I guess you can call it, news in the Ronda Rousey world this week. her coach came out and did an interview with Errol Hawani on Monday and said a lot of things. Said he doesn't care about what people think about him, but then pointed out a lot of YouTube comments that he's read about from people that are negative. So I'm thinking maybe he does care what people say about him.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think if you could say you don't care, but I don't think you'd be reading YouTube comments if you didn't care.
If there's anybody who shouldn't be reading YouTube comments, though, it's probably Edmund Tavernian. A, he seems like a excitable fellow, you know? I mean, just sensitive okay, a little bit. And just like, what do you expect to see? I mean, it would take you literally 30 seconds to find, okay, this is a bad idea. I shouldn't be doing this.
Do you ever look through your YouTube comments?
Yeah, but mine are all positive. Mine are all really good.
That's true.
So,
would you say you don't care what people say, what people think? Because you do.
Yeah, I think
everyone
does.
On some level cares what people think.
Yeah, I think
so. To say
does.
You don't care is just, it's foolish. And he does care, obviously. He's looking through them. But he also, you know, says some things about Ronda Rousey's future. First of all, setting the number. Let's kind of run down item by item. Sets the number at 50-50. Will Ronda fight again? I'll put it at 50-50. That number seems out of whack to me. That's a little surprising. What did you think when you heard that number?
Yeah, I hesitate to think that I know more about someone than a coach who has been with them throughout their entire
right.
career.
Right.
I also think that there's reasons. Well, he goes on to say some other kind of crazier stuff,
okay.
which kind of make me question the 50-50 number. You know, he has reason to want to see her fight again, of course, financially. And I think it's high. And I think you and I spoke about her potentially going to the WWE. I think that's far more likely, and I think that drastically lowers the number.
We said last week, like, you know, Ronda Rousey had been in town the day before we were on last week, and I thought there was a good chance she would announce a deal at that point, that she was going
too.
To the UFC full time.
Yeah, I did too. Like, I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, and so to go from that last week, okay, that didn't happen, to now hearing her coach say he thinks it's 50-50. And again, there's reasons. He wants her to fight. He needs the money. We think, based on court documents and other things out there, he probably needs the money that he would get from her fighting. Probably needs one last shot at redemption as a coach to maybe recruit other athletes going forward in the future, because right now his reputation is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure he would love for her to get back in there. So a lot of reasons. Now, here's the biggest problem that I have. That he wants the one fight, if she does take just one fight, to be against Cyborg. That seems preposterous.
Yeah, so if she were to only come back for one fight, right? And he also mentioned that she has been suffering through some nagging injuries, you know, over the last couple of years, which we kind of knew about,
right.
You know, the knee surgeries, I believe it was a hip issue,
yeah.
You know, a lifetime of grappling and doing judo. If your body is giving out on you and you know you can only take one more fight, it does make sense to take the biggest money fight possible, right?
Sure.
However, that's not the only thing to consider.
No.
I think in this case, the bigger thing to consider is if you care about Ronda Rousey as a person, even slightly, that you want to keep her very far away from Chris Cyborg, because it does not look like she is comfortable in the cage anymore. It does not look like she wants to be there. Her confidence is completely shot. She won't even talk about what happened in the Holly Holm and Amanda Nunes fights. So, and you're going to put her up against a woman who is operating on all cylinders, confident, 145-pound champion of the world, and you're going to sit there and say, she's too slow for us. And that was his comment. He's either really needs the money that badly
right.
or living in such a fantasy world that it's like, come back to us, Edmund.
Well, I made this argument yesterday, though, and I'll get your take on it. And I know that is the biggest money fight possible, but by how much? Because to me, a Ronda Rousey fight is just about Ronda Rousey. And the person that's opposite her in the cage isn't adding that much to it. So, yes, Cyborg would be the most marketable fight and the most profitable fight, but I don't think it's by that much.
I mean, the other obvious option would be who? Misha Tate, right?
Of course.
So, let's say Misha Tate.
And by the way, that fight might do better than Rousey-Cyborg.
No, I don't think so.
The average fan can understand these two girls hate each other. They're two pretty girls. They're going to go fight again for the third time.
Everything you're saying makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But I do think that casual fans are starting to know who Cyborg is. At least the
starting to.
At least like, oh, this woman's dominant. You know, that I don't know. I don't think they're super familiar with her, but that name registers something. That Cyborg. Yes, I know that that woman is a knockout artist. I still think Cyborg would sell more than a Tate fight.
Maybe a little more, but I don't think it's enough to factor in the negatives involved in that and all the other things. Now, I think I made the case already, and I'll do it again, that I don't want Ronda Rousey to come back for one fight. I think that's silly. Come back or don't. And I want her to come back and start, like, take some fights against mid-tier women's bantamweight fighters, build the confidence back up, continue to work hard on, you know, improving other areas, but go back to what you do best. Try to focus on that. I think you've said it before, and I could not agree more, that knocking out Betch Kohea was, like, the worst thing that could have ever happened. And then she started falling. She's like, oh, Edmund's right. I can box now. Like, no, you can't. And so I think go back to what you do best, work hard, go, like, you know, 13 in the rankings to 11 to 9, like, kind of build your way back up and actually make another run at getting better. Like, don't throw yourself back into the sharks. Build yourself back up. Try to make one last run at the title if that's what you want to do. I would rather see that.
See, and this is where the problem is, though, because I agree with you, and I don't see any reason to do that. Why do that? Why come back and really try and reinvent yourself? I mean, there's a legacy issue of it, but you know how much hard work that is. And if her body is giving out on her, people know the blueprint now of how to beat her.
Yeah, but also think of the narrative of she went right to the top and then had to work her way back up. Like, it's such a great story.
Oh, it's a great story. But realistically, Adam, you think she's going to get in and completely reinvent herself as a fighter?
No, not reinvent. Uninvent. Uninvent whatever she was trying to do the last three fights.
But again, man, the division caught up.
It did.
It, you know, and this is nothing against any of Ronda Rousey's former opponents, but a lot of the people that she's beat are either not really even fighting anymore, or they're not even in the upper tier anymore. A lot of the women that she beat, she comes back and starts to try and figure things out and go back to herself. Dude, she's not beating Amanda Nunes.
No, I have an opponent.
She's not beating Valentina Shevchenko.
I've got an opponent in mind. Caitlin Chuchagian.
Why is that?
I'm looking at the rankings and I'm like, all right, yeah, Caitlin Chuchagian, that's the fighter. I think, like, that's a good matchup. I think she'll beat her. She's got a number next to her name.
And if she beats her, then...
I just
don't see the point.
Here's one of the problems with that theory that I have is that, like, you start trying to work your way back up the rankings, it's everyone she's already beat. I mean, that's the problem. Because you go, like, all right, Chukagian is number 13 in the, you know, official UFC rankings. You start looking above her, right? There's Liz Carmouche, Alexis Davis, Sarah McMahon, Kat Zingano. Like, it's all people she's already beat.
Yeah.
So, like, if you try to take that stepladder again, like, yeah, you're already beating the people
that you've already She would only
over.
Need to beat one, and then I think they could make the Misha Tate fight again. And Misha Tate is phenomenal. I love her. She's accomplished a whole lot. She was at the very top of the sport, but she was always a bad matchup for Ronda. So stylistically, Misha's got to overcome a lot to win that fight.
So she beats, again, I'm just throwing the name out there randomly. She beats Caitlin Chukagian, then she beats Misha Tate, and then she can go back in and fight for the title.
I'm more on board than I was 2 minutes ago.
She has the confidence. She builds herself back up. And then she can go back into it, like, and who knows what she wants to do.
She's got to address the media she's got to talk about things.
But I think after, you know, you beat Misha and you put that behind you again, and it's like, all right, now I'm back to working my way back up to the title. And then it becomes kind of easier to talk about it and, like, hey, this is where I've been, and now here's where I'm at, and I'm very happy about it. Again, she doesn't have to do all those things.
Hey, man, here's a real question. And I'm not trying to make a point here. I'm asking a legitimate question. Does Ronda have the humility to even do that?
Well, doesn't she almost have to at this point? Didn't those beatings do that? I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's an interesting question that we'll, I guess, continue to monitor. I mean, we'll see where this goes. I thought the 50-50 number was crazy. That Edmund Tavernier threw out there, but
what would your number be? What is your number right now?
20.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's about
20% that she's gonna fight. That's where I'm at.
We'll see how this WWE We'll see how this WWE thing goes. Maybe she's good at it. Maybe she's real good at it.
Yeah, but she has to act.
there's not the acting in WWE from what the very little
her.
I've seen is not great.
No, you know what it is? Because it absolutely stood out to me how bad she was at that promo.
In just that little video?
Yeah.
All right. But go back, take yourself back to that WrestleMania when she was at The Rock. If you put her in good scenarios and you put her around people who really know what they're doing, I think she'll be all right.
Okay.
It's not like she's going to be out there every week either. You know, it's just
remember
like.
Remember when she was going to be like the biggest star in Hollywood and now it's like you have to hide her in WWE promos?
I do remember that, yeah. Hey, acting's hard, dude.
Of course it is. Of course. I couldn't do it. But it
if all they need out of her, because, you know, maybe she's a good performer just in terms of the actual wrestling part of it. So if all they need out of her is just a couple little skits in the Rousey grimace, and then they can kind of base the narrative around her not talking that much, especially live, you know, because you can do multiple takes of things. You know, for video packages
on Raw
and
WrestleMania
things.
Stuff, you gotta nail it.
Yeah, I think there's a way to fake it. I think there's a way to fake it around her, and it won't bring the house down. But I think she can have a viable career there.
Listen,
if that's what she wants.
WWE is a very difficult thing to do. It's some of the best athletes in the world. There's great acting involved. They're very, very talented people, and I'm not just saying this because Becky Lynch started following me on Twitter. That's not what I'm talking about.
No, good for you.
I know. I'm very happy
good
about
for you.
That. Yeah, I'm very happy. I didn't know who she was like 10 days ago.
You know, you told me that you thought you left an impression on her when she was here.
Yeah.
So clearly you were right.
I was absolutely right.
Good for you.
Although I did tweet about leaving said impression, and then that's when she followed me. So maybe it was just to monitor.
You continue to surprise me,
make
Adam.
Sure,
you're full of surprises.
Make sure that I'm not like too creepy or crazy. I think that's what's going on. All right, well, that is the mandatory, obligatory Ronda Rousey update that everybody has to have whenever they do anything about MMA. We'll monitor where she goes from here. But there is a fight card coming up in Japan on Saturday. There's also one in San Jose we'll get into. But in Japan, we have UFC Fight Night 117 and a pretty good main event with Ovince St. Preux and Shogun Hua. Oh, he's out. Because every main event has to get canceled.
Dude, like literally today, I was like, oh yeah, these two fought already. Like I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
I'd literally forgotten that. I mean, that's how uninspiring this main event was already to begin with.
No, but I loved that it was marketed as like Shogun OSP2. And you're like, wait, there was a one?
Yeah.
Were people clamoring?
I completely forgot about
Have
the one.
Have people been clamoring for a rematch since it happened?
Man. In a weird way, it makes almost more sense now that you have, you know, the Japanese fighter in Okami headlining, but that's not even really true because Shogun, you know, a very, very good significant portion
right.
of his career took place over there, so.
And Okami is not a light heavyweight.
He's not even a middleweight, is he?
He's basically a welterweight.
He's a welterweight.
I did this. This is absolutely not to try to put you on the spot or anything like that, because I will say this, I have zero chance, and I guarantee nobody else in the audience does. Yushin Okami has a 4-fight winning streak. Did you even know that? He has won four in a row on the regional circuit.
Well, this isn't fair because I was kind of looking at things.
Okay.
You know, but if you had asked me that yesterday, I would have guessed like 2-fight winning streak.
But I was going to throw out there, can you name any fighter that he beat during the 4-fight winning streak?
Paul Bradley.
Okay, that's good.
That is the only one that I can name.
You looked it up. I could not have even ventured a guess on one. Like,
yeah.
I don't think I even could have come up with a name. Although I probably would have thrown out like John Fitch, but that's actually a loss that he had in World Series of Fighting.
Yeah, he really. You know what else was interesting as I was looking back on this? Because, you know, some people were kind of mad when the UFC cut Yushin Okami in 2013
yeah.
because. At that time, he had won 4 fights in a row, and then he had lost to Jacare. And people were, you know, now we're almost kind of getting more used to it. But this is like, this topic comes up every, like, 6 months or so.
Right.
Like, does UFC want the best fighters, or they want, like, the most sellable fighters? You know, and everybody argues about it.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, Dana even came out. That was when, I think it was when he was still doing his scrums. And he was like, yeah, you know, I cut Yushin Okami because he had become a gatekeeper at middleweight. We're only interested in, you know, guys who can potentially make that run. I think he needs to go outside of the promotion and get his confidence up, and then, you know, maybe we'd bring him back if he does really well. And now here's they've brought him back And he's really only
he went and won four fights in a row.
But those aren't not against UFC caliber opponents whatsoever. The only two real good opponents he fought were John Fitch and David Branch, and he lost both of those.
Right. But he won four in a row, including against Paul Bradley and Shinjo Suzuki. And yeah. Andre Lobato.
That's just God, what a crisis over there.
He also beat Ryuta Sakurai.
Now he's moving up to 205 pounds when his last fight was at 170.
And his last fight, by the way, was July 29th. Like, it's not like he's been in the gym like putting on weight, trying to move up. He's just jumping in there. It's pretty insane that he's gonna fight OSP. Well,
it actually is pretty insane.
It is. But hey, listen, they needed something, they got it. Okami coming home to Japan. Should be fun on Saturday. We'll get to some picks. Look at the odds for some of the main card fights. Also get into Bellator and a couple other things to close things out. MMA Insiders, Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto on a Wednesday.
MMA Insider Show.
Here, MMA Insiders on Wednesday, our new home. Join us each and every Wednesday right here at 7 o'clock. I don't know. I don't want to jinx it. I mean, I think I'll just say right now, I think we have Kevin Lee coming on next week, so I don't want to jinx it.
Don't bail on us, Kevin.
It was already an issue today.
It's official now.
Yeah, we're saying it. He's coming on next week. Kevin Lee, future interim lightweight title challenger. Not challenger. It's really just being created, so... One of the fighters in the interim lightweight title fight.
Oh, he's challenging for a title. Yeah.
I guess they're both challengers.
Yeah.
Usually challenger is the guy that doesn't have the belt. Neither one of them does, I guess. So, yeah, they both are coming on next week with us. So don't miss that. Right here, 7 o'clock next Wednesday night. But before that, UFC Fight Night 117 over in Japan. We just mentioned new main event, OSP, Ovince St. Preux, taking on Yushin Okami, and I think rightfully so, a massive favorite. I see... pretty much minus 450 to minus 500 most spots. I know the Westgate right now is at minus 550 on OSP. Any value at all or any chance at all the underdog comes through?
No.
He's just too small, right?
Yeah. Well, dude, he doesn't hit hard at welterweight. He's not known as a hard hitter at welterweight. I mean, worst case scenario, I think OSP, if he's having any kind of trouble whatsoever, he's like, okay, I'll just walk through this guy's offense, clinch him, take him down. I mean, OSP is really his best game has always been his grappling, so we'll take him down and submit him. I think it'll happen early. I made my predictions today. I said first round. I think it's gonna be like that.
A quick finish for OSP according to Brett Okamoto. Well, the co-main event now probably should have been bumped up to the main event, in my opinion.
Should have been main event the entire time.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm really looking forward to this fight, not just because it's Claudia Gadelha, and I've talked about she is one of my favorite fighters out there. Claudia Gadelha and Jessica Andrade, who I thought was going to beat.
I was
going to
say,
Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
I thought Jessica Andrade was your favorite fighter.
Well, I mean, I'd pick her. Claudia is one of my favorite fighters, though.
Oh.
I would say that I was one of the most adamant ones out there saying Jessica Andrade was absolutely going to beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and I was way wrong.
I give you credit. You got to put yourself out there sometimes.
But
none of this sitting on the fence like, oh, I think she's a live dog. You went with it. Yeah. I respect that.
And I didn't pick her going into the fight. Like, I had picked her after her first fight at strawweight and said, that's going to be the champion.
That seems a little aggressive, but...
She worked her way up there. I got credit, at least half credit for that, maybe, and then she got to the title fight and had no shot. Claudia Gadelha has been the one that has, I think, given Jędrzejczyk the most trouble.
For sure.
In her fights, and... You know, it's going to be tough for her to earn another shot now that she's fought her twice, but if she wins this fight, it's pretty clear now. Well, it's pretty clear she's right there in the picture again, but she almost is becoming the female Joseph Benavidez.
Yeah, and she may have changed her mind on this, I guess, but I remember talking to her before her last fight. She was like, nah, I don't want to go to 125. I have no interest in 125. This is my division. And I respect that from like a... Like, I'm where I'm supposed to be, and that belt will be mine eventually. But there's also, like, you've lost to the champion twice. You know, maybe moving up to 125 is not a terrible idea.
Maybe she's hoping Jan Jacek moves up.
Yeah.
And then she can just take over the belt.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It does seem like even a win here, what does it necessarily do? It's on a card that very few people are watching, that lost its main event against a tough opponent, and where does it really take her? I don't know if it really takes her anywhere.
By the way, on a weird channel, too. I don't know how many people are aware that it's on FXX. So, like, to go look for...
I know FXX for its... Doesn't it do, like, Simpson marathons where literally... It runs it for like 7 days straight.
They did every Simpsons ever.
Which is cool, I think. I mean, I'm a Simpsons fan. I didn't watch any of it, but that's kind of cool.
They show like Two and a Half Men a lot, like weird shows like that. But yeah, FXX will be the home for the fights on Saturday. So
I think
a lot of
imagine.
People might even be thinking like, oh, I want to watch these fights. I don't know where to find them. Yeah. Well, that's where you would find them. So I don't know how many people are actually going to be watching. But yeah, that is where they will be on Saturday night with FXX. And Listen, I think this is a really good fight. I'm excited about this fight. And I think Andrade is more than capable of winning the fight, but
I
was certainly let down by her performance in the title fight. But we'll see how she bounces back. I will say I thought Gadelha looked great in her last fight coming back when I thought maybe she'd have a little bit of a letdown emotionally. She came out and looked fantastic. So we'll see how she is able to perform. But I think probably too big of a favorite, up around minus $3
on this fight. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Seems a little high. For Gadelha coming into this, but she's been a big favorite in every fight except for the Andrzejczyk fight going forward. Anything else on this card? I mean, you got Dongkyun Kim against Gomi. Kim a massive favorite in that one, and not a whole lot else. A lot of Japanese fighters, a lot of Asian fighters will be in action, so I'm sure the fans will be happy. I don't know how excited the mainstream American fan will be.
Gokom Saki.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if a lot of people are aware of. He's fighting this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, a fun guy, kickboxer, hasn't fought in 2 years, kickboxing or MMA.
He's been, like, non-existent. I think they announced, like, in Dallas that he was going to be fighting.
Yes, it should be one of those things that, like, you would have thought they would have made a bigger deal about it, but they clearly have not.
Right.
Maybe it's a bigger deal over in Japan. I don't know.
I think it might be. I mean, they made a big deal of the unveiling that he signed and he's going to fight. And it's like... Okay, when? Oh, as the fourth fight on a card on FXX in Saitama? Okay.
I'm, like, curious about it. I'm not, like, that's about it. Like, I'm curious to see. Let's see what this guy's all about, because I really haven't seen him fight. I've seen highlights, and that's it.
The other issue for this UFC card coming up on Saturday is that it's also going against a Bellator card. I mean, I think they're off in times, but there's a Bellator card coming up.
No, I thought Bellator was Saturday.
Yeah, I thought they both were.
No.
Oh, it's Friday night card?
UFC is Friday.
No, I'm way off. Look at me. It's Saturday in Japan. That's why I was looking at the date of...
Yeah.
I think it's Saturday in Japan.
It's normal broadcast time here, but on a Friday.
Yeah. See, I'm way off on that. I thought it was...
I'm glad I could let you know
about
that.
I'm glad you did, too, because I was looking at...
Forget the channel. You're confused on the day it's on.
I guess that's why it's on FXX. And I was looking at September 23rd. That's Saturday, but that is in Japan. So it is September 22nd. Well, I can't get time zones right, much less international datelines.
It's a good thing it's not running into that Bellator card, because I think that Bellator card is actually pretty good.
And that's what I was going to get to. And I think a couple of things about this card. First of all, obviously the Bellator debut of Roy Nelson. That is interesting, certainly for Las Vegas people who have been following him for a long time. And Roy in a new training camp setup. We'll have a video up on the Review Journal about the people in his camp now that are running things for Roy Nelson, training a lot at Mayweather's gym, actually, here in town. So Roy Nelson against Javi Ayala. Roy Nelson minus 225, favorite in that fight. I actually am very excited about Lorenz Larkin and Paul Daly.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is a fun fight.
Yeah, that should be the main event.
Yeah, very possibly.
Yeah, that should have been the main event. But either way, yeah, great, great fight. And Bellator just announced Douglas Lima, Rory McDonald on January 20th, so that this fight plays into that one.
That's going to be
potentially
in L.A.?
Yeah, the Forum.
Yeah, that'll be fun. But I think Larkin Daly is good. Larkin, actually about a 250 favorite in this one. I do like him. I don't know if I like him enough to lay that much, though.
This would be a fight I'd probably just, if I was a better, I would just stay away from, because I do like Larkin, but you're right. I mean, Daly's got that power to think about.
You said that should be the main event. The actual main event is Ben Henderson against Pitbull. Ben Henderson, I just don't know about anymore at all. I used to think he was so good. I would pick him almost every time he would fight.
Yeah.
But now as a -$2 favorite in this fight, I don't think I would be able to lay that. I just don't know where Ben Henderson is right now. I think more mentally than anything. I mean, he's got the abilities. He always had the work ethic. It's just like, I don't know where his mind is.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to commit to anything.
Yeah.
You know, he used to have this kind of roughshed mentality in there. You know, he had a physical game. He was smart. He was intelligent. He knew what he wanted to do. Lately, it just doesn't really seem like he knows what he wants to do. And when you hesitate, you know, and guys pick up on that, I mean, they're taking advantage of it.
And the other one I really wanted to hit on real quick, Aaron Pico, who you did a big story on before his debut. I think you jinxed him. He was one of the most hyped debuts in MMA history and lost.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it was the best thing that could have happened. I think the best thing is to struggle a little bit and learn off a win. But I don't think it's terrible that he lost in his debut. Kind of got a little rude awakening of, okay, this is what it's like. And now he can kind of develop a little bit under the radar because nowhere near the attention this time as there was last time.
No, there's not. And you almost wonder if that was done by design. I mean, he said, I talked to him last week, and he said, no, he didn't shut down media or anything, but the Bellator announced this fight really late.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing that he lost. I don't even think it's a big deal. Like, he's 21 years old. He's got a long career ahead of him. The way in which it happened, though, I think could put more pressure on him. He was finished in 24 seconds. I think that puts pressure on him in a way that, had he just lost a decision, it would not have.
So this fight, he comes in against Justin Lin, Aaron Pico, -425. I expect we'll see a completely different fighter. I mean, we didn't see anything from him. He didn't really get to fight at all.
We'll see. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really intrigued.
I'm in to watch this. And that is Saturday. We mentioned UFC Friday. Saturday in Japan. Friday here. On FXX. Make sure you check out Brett on Twitter, B-Okamoto ESPN. Listen to his podcast as well. You can hear from Mike Perry and all of his crazy racism, although he didn't say that on the podcast. He was very behaved, according to Brett. And we'll be here next week. Hopefully,
don't hold a grudge, Adam.
Hopefully Kevin Lee will join us next Wednesday, MMA Insiders. Keep it right here, and we'll talk to you next week.
MMA Insider Show.